This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
Good evening and welcome to The Informer. My name is David Gale. Tonight on The Informer we have Victorian Health Minister, the Honourable Jill Hennessy, and afterwards we'll have Megan Fitzgerald from the Fitzroy Legal Service. Later on we'll be talking to Rhett Corker from Movember. Last week, the Victorian Health Minister, the Honourable Jill Hennessy, stood up to the trolls of the internet who attacked her on social media. Tonight on The Informer, we have the Honourable Jill Hennessy on the line. Welcome, Jill.
Good afternoon, David.
Great to have you on The Informer. I haven't seen you since the PrepEx trial, but look, last week there was a story about you. You've been attacked on the internet, haven't you? Tell us what happened.
I'm a really big campaigner for important public health issues, and one of those issues is about vaccination. And there's a pretty organised movement that are opposed to vaccination. In my view, they peddle myths about the consequences of vaccination and effectively tell people it's harmful to them to vaccinate. And I'm really happy to have that debate because I disagree with it. It's not based on science and it's not based on evidence. But over the last year and a half in making the case for vaccination, what I've discovered about many involved in this movement is that it is full of people that anonymously sit behind their computers and type out the most vile of messages, things that are really sexist, things that threaten physical violence, things wishing cancer upon me and awful things to happen to my children. And I suppose... I got to the point where I just thought, well, enough is enough. And I suppose I wanted to do two things. I made a little video where I read some of these tweets out with a little bit of humour.
Yeah, I saw that.
because I really wanted to highlight, I think that ultimately we've got this really important conversation as a community to have around how do we debate and discuss things on the internet without necessarily... rewarding people that, you know, are just plain awful, say terrible things to people. And we know that some of these attacks by trolls have disastrous impacts on things like people's mental health. There was another objective that I had, and that was to really say, look at the caliber of these people and what they say. Are these people you really want to get public health advice from?
That's true.
Get advice from a doctor. Not from tools on the internet.
Yeah, I've noticed that if you go onto the internet, you can actually say, look, you know, should I vaccinate my child? And you will get directed to some of these sites. So, you know, if genuine people are just sort of taking advice off these sites, that's not a great thing. So I suppose that's certainly a message to put out there.
And people die as a consequence of preventable illnesses and diseases. And A, I want them to have the right information, but B, I suppose I also wanted to highlight that a group of people that present themselves as advocating for children's health write the most vile and revolting messages again and again and again. And I suppose I feel a frustration sometimes about the accountability of those people. And I know many other people that work in the public health movement who don't have the same platforms as I do, but are also... being, you know, attacked and, you know, people phoning their workers, people writing awful, awful things to them constantly. And I think sometimes we've got to stand up and just shine a light on that behaviour and go, is this really the community that we want to be? Because I don't.
Yeah, well, you've certainly stood up against those people. I suppose maybe I picked up on this story because, you know, in the LGBTI community, we are certainly at times victims of, you know, abuse of different sorts. Certainly not of the trolling that you've had happen. And I expect that, you may have been criticised before in the past. Why have you brought this to attention to people now? I mean, you know, you could save this up for another time during an election campaign. You could say any time that you wanted to bring it up for other purposes within your portfolio. But why have you brought this up now? Was it getting too much to you, or?
Well, probably a combination. I personally got to the point where I just thought enough is enough. And I'm a resilient person. You know, I accept and understand that when you go into politics, you've got to have a thick skin and you've got to be prepared to step up for people being critical. But I was also kind of thinking about it in the context of watching the US election. And
sure.
I just think there is this line, and we'll always debate about where that line is, but there is this line that continues to be crossed, and that people somehow think it's acceptable to get online and demean people, whether that's because of their views on public health or their sexuality or their gender or their race. And I do think that if we don't, I know there's always this debate, do you feed it by putting a light on it?
Mm-hmm.
Do you give them what they're seeking? But I think that if we can just prompt some discussion and debate about how can we talk about things with respect on political matters that we might disagree on without really demeaning and harming people. And the other issue I became concerned is increasingly these people were attacking people that work in the public health movement. And I just felt that if I didn't shine a light on their behaviour, no one would know what it's like, to open up your emails or to open up letters at work and to have filthy,
a barrage of attacks, such as you've received,
served at you. And it is really damaging to as an individual. It can be damaging to people's kind of mental health and well-being or their, sense of security. But as a community, I don't want to be part of a community where we say, you get to type, poisonous, untrue things about people.
Yeah.
And for there to never be any consequence. And, I'm lucky I've got some platforms I can use to call these people out.
Yeah.
But if we don't call it out, then it increasingly gets accepted as a societal norm. And it's not normal.
No.
It's not normal to talk to people like that. And it's not normal to try and denigrate people and make them feel bad about themselves. And it's not normal to go out and tell people that something as important as being vaccinated and protecting yourself against illnesses and diseases
is going to
really have a bad impact.
It certainly is unacceptable behaviour, and I believe we do have federal laws in place that mean people can be charged for doing this sort of activity on the internet as well. Should these people that have been making these comments, should they be charged? I mean, they can be charged.
Look, they can, and people should feel encouraged to report or online behaviour to ACORN. There's not a great success rate in terms of people being prosecuted, and I certainly wouldn't rule out making those kind of requests in the future. But my purpose here was really to shine a light on some of these people, and in a public domain, to say, if I just reflect your behaviour and your vile attacks back at you, if I just reflect it by shining a light on it, does it help people think about how we might better behave when it comes to online issues? And more importantly, I suppose, I also wanted to remind people out there, don't take advice from people like this. Don't take health advice from people like this. And let's remember, there is something very small, I think, in the psychology of a person that seeks to put people down so brutally and yet without consequence.
Yeah.
So I think we've got to get better at thinking about what those consequences are. But with all of the advances in technology and communication, we've had those advances, but we haven't worked out how to behave properly. I've got a couple of little girls, and I think about, not wanting them to be victim of online bullying and abuse, and I also want to think about how to teach them to behave with some degree of integrity in the way in which they communicate online. And at every juncture, whether it is the abuse that gets meted out to the LGBTI community, the way in which some of these debates, and I think people like Donald Trump is a disgrace as a public role model on these issues, the way in which he uses those, the worse we get the more license we give people to behave like that, we don't say, you know what, I'm not putting up with that crap, and I'm going to actually show people the kind of things and the way in which you behave online.
I think,
and as
that's,
a community, we've got to gradually kind of work out where those lines are.
That's the sort of thing that Hillary Clinton has done by just actually letting Donald Trump speak for himself. It's a similar sort of situation, and hopefully, you know, we end up with better elected public figures, certainly in the United States, and we'll see what happens. Look,
Julie, I hope so. I feel very frightened about the outcome of the first election, but I think the most powerful tweet that Hillary Clinton did was when she... which is kind of cut and paste one of Donald's tweets and just delete your account.
Exactly.
Delete your account.
Jill, it's great to have you talking with us today. I look forward to talking to you again once more on The Informer in the future.
David.
We'll just find time in your busy schedule. Thank you so much.
Terrific. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Jill.
On the 27th of July this year, the Fitzroy Legal Service filed a constitutional challenge in the High Court on behalf of Doctors for Refugees. The case was to test whether the secrecy laws in the Australian Border Force Act were impermissible and related to the implied freedom of political communication. You might recall that we spoke with Megan Fitzgerald, who's a lawyer and social action policy and law reform manager at the Fitzroy Legal Service, on The Informer on the 2nd of August about the test case. Now, there has recently been an interesting development. On the 30th of September, the Secretary of the Immigration Department signed an amendment specifically carving out health professionals from the definition of immigration and border protection workers, just as the parties were, I'm guessing, preparing to go to the High Court. So today we're again joined by Megan Fitzgerald to discuss this huge win. Welcome back, Megan.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, Megan, what does the amendment mean for health professionals working for refugees?
Currently, it's an exemption, which means that they don't fall under the broad definition of an immigration and border protection worker, which means that they're not covered by the provisions of the Act at all, unless they fall under one of the other definitions, which is generally not going to be the case. And the definition of health professional is very broad in terms of the exemption. So it includes midwives, nurses, counsellors, psychiatrists. It's a very broad group of people and quite an enormous win for the medical profession in terms of the pressure that they've been placing in relation to the issue through acts of civil disobedience.
Yeah, exactly. Do you think that the Immigration Department backed down because they thought they were going to lose in the High Court? Well, I mean, what's your opinion on that?
That's not really something I can have an opinion on. but what I can say is that the determination is interesting because it doesn't relate to the nature of the information or any particular sensitivity or threat to the public interest or national security. It's simply a blanket exemption based on a particular group of professionals who, by coincidence, happen to be the group of professionals that have brought this case to test its limits.
Yeah.
And I should add, also have been very forthright in explaining the way in which their ethical duties conflict with this piece of legislation. One of the issues that's come to the fore immediately is that teachers and humanitarian aid workers and social workers may be under very similar duties, but are not included in the exemption.
Well, that was what I was going to talk to you about next, because GetUp has described the amendment as, quote, a cowardly legal manoeuvre, given that it does only affect health professionals and doesn't allow those other potential whistleblowers that you've mentioned, such as social workers and teachers, to speak out simply because they weren't part of the test case that was going to be run in the High Court. So what do you think is going to happen there?
Well, first of all, those are not my words.
No, they're not.
What I expect would happen, I know what's happening because I'm running the case.
Yeah.
We're reviewing our position in terms of, because many cases, the first threshold when you bring a case into the High Court or into any court is you need to establish standing to test the law.
Yeah.
And if you fail on standing, or if an amendment like this is made that changes through standing, the substantive issues never go to court.
Yes.
In this case, we're reviewing whether our standing really has been affected by this determination or not. So whilst it's a huge win for the medical profession, which belongs very much to them, because I can't say, the amount of courage that I've seen in terms of people putting at risk their careers, their income, to do what is in their conscience. But what we're looking at is what are the different sources of information that inform political discourse, and they're the sources of information that Doctors for Refugees rely on, and doctors are a significant proportion, and there are other people also who make disclosures. So it may be that standing is not affected. The second issue is that the determination is not retrospective. So anybody who's engaged in that conduct over the last year and a half, it's not suddenly liberated from any potential prosecution.
Yeah.
And the third issue is that the determination is done by the secretary. It doesn't. It's not subject to a political process or a parliamentary process. So as quickly and as quietly as this determination has been issued, it could be withdrawn. Yeah. Which would completely alter the operation of the legislation again.
Yeah,
so,
it could take you back to square one, really.
Exactly. So we're reviewing our position. The legal team's looking closely into it. And we've indicated that we'll announce on Friday how we will be moving forward. But whether... I can say that this is certainly not the end of the battle.
No.
In relation to transparency. I can give you my word on that.
Well, I mean, yeah, because really at the end of the day, you've got to assess whether there still is that constitutional challenge that needs to be made in the High Court.
That's correct. And the thing is, whether doctors are exempted, I mean, the reality is the duty of care for a teacher is really no different in terms of their duty of care to young people. Any professional, and as I in the legal sphere, for listeners who aren't lawyers, we all have duties of care, and the more responsibility we have, the higher our duty of care. And that isn't this legislation really sits in a very uncomfortable position to that duty of care that we have when we have people within our care.
Absolutely.
So yeah.
Absolutely. Well, while this amendment is, I suppose you could be described as a win of sorts, because it is now allows health professionals to advocate publicly on behalf of their patients, it, I suppose, doesn't really go to the heart of the matter, which is the conditions that the refugees are subject to while they're in immigration detention.
That's correct. And what my clients, what Doctors for Refugees, immediately their response was, this isn't about the doctors, this is about the conditions. We don't want to be in a position where we say, okay, we're not going to be prosecuted, but somebody else might be.
Yeah.
They don't want their profession to be separated out as more important. The only, like, it's not a self-interest litigation, as you can imagine. It's very much public interest litigation. So really it's for the legal, you know, our job is to scrape through and work out what the position is, whether we need amendments, whether our standing is affected. But I've already been approached by Teachers for Refugees, and I had a wonderful experience today where a nurse, I presented a symposium, a nurse came up to me, and she'd been working on Nauru and just said what an incredible freedom it is to her to be able to speak about what she experienced while she was working on Nauru. So, you know, even just in terms of the health of people who need to express themselves, this has had an impact.
That's fantastic news. Thank you very much again for joining us, Megan Fitzgerald from Fitzroy Legal Service. We'll look forward to We'll look forward to talking to you again soon, hopefully when you guys have clarified your position in relation to this matter.
Sounds wonderful. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Megan.
Bye.
On average, Australian men die around 4 years younger than women. Suicide is the leading cause of death for men aged 15 to 44. On average, 6 men each day take their own life in Australia. Number one cancer is prostate cancer. It's the most commonly diagnosed cancer in Australian men. And testicular cancer is the second most common cancer behind skin cancers in young men aged 18 to 39. What do you want to do about it? Grow a moustache. Tonight on The Informer, we're joined by Rhett Corker, Men's Health Program Manager for Movember. Welcome, Rhett.
Hi, Dave. Thanks very much for having me.
Great to have you on The Informer. Look, how can we get involved in Movember?
There's lots of ways you can get involved, and we're obviously a global charity that's focused on men's health, and one of the only ones that is focused year-round. And the way that you can get involved coming up, obviously, being November, is to three particular ways, is to grow a moustache. So that's definitely one way for half the population to get involved. The other ways are to move, so you can get active for men's health, do some sort of physical activity during the month of November, or you can host an event, so either throw or go to a Movember event anywhere or any time during the month of November.
Firstly, in growing a moustache, now I've done this before, and you know, I work, I've got a deli that I run, and put a collection thing onto the counter, and people started giving money. I had a couple of young boys working for me who couldn't grow moustaches, so they actually wore moustaches. But you know, it's a great thing to get involved in, to actually do the growing of the moustache. We all look like porn stars for a good month of Movember, which I think is a great idea. So yeah, definitely growing moustaches. What sort of style are you going to be sporting this year?
Listen, my moustache is atrocious. I, despite being 32 years old, I'm curious as to whether I've actually hit puberty yet. I have such a thin moustache that and a big gap right in the middle. So my mate actually says I'm growing a second set of eyebrows. It looks that bad, but yeah, no, it's a lot of fun. It starts conversations, and ultimately that's what we're focused on, is guys talking to each other. It can start off about, you know, how bad your moustache is, but we see a lot of guys that it starts off as a, you know, a bit of fun, and then it turns into, you know, talking about their health and really engaging with each other.
Yeah, look, I mean, I've also worked with other people and just said to them, look, if you've got a Movember page, can I donate to it? So, you know, it can be as simple as, you know, another mate at work that happens to be growing a moustache, you know that they're doing it for Movember, that you can just go online and put $20 or $50 onto theirs. I suppose, you know, if you see somebody in the street, you could always just ask them what their name is and maybe donate to their page, maybe get their phone number. I don't know. It's but, you know, it's very easy to support the cause in that way in the moustaches.
We support every moustache, whether it's giving them a wink of the eye and saying, great Mo, whether it's jumping onto Movember.com and actually donating to their Mo space. We're supportive of every moustache we see.
And it's not just men that get involved, obviously.
I thought you were going to say it's not just men that grow moustaches.
Well, but women also get involved, don't they, Rhett? Tell us about how women can get involved in Movember.
Yeah, no, that's very true. So women often get involved, once again, about supporting the guys in their life, the guys growing moustaches, or just having a conversation with the guys around them about their health. But they also jump onto Movember.com and they sign up for any sort of move activity. So that's getting active during the month. It's you can do anything from something big like running a marathon, something brave like learning how to surf, or it can be outrageous like wearing some sort of costume whilst doing some sort of physical activity as well. I'll leave it to your imagination. But it's a really key way that that Mo sisters get involved during the month and support the Mo bros around them.
And also you can host an event. So I could have like a, I don't know, a Movember dinner party or something, or a Movember afternoon tea or whatever. What other sorts of events do you suggest?
Yeah, I mean, dinner parties are a great way to do it because obviously, you're catching up with friends and supporting the conversations that we're trying to start during the month of Movember. So, yeah, dinner parties, you can do anything, do a day down the beach once the sun's out. We support every type of event. There's lots of people doing long distance exercise events, or people doing something down at the local surf club and things like that. So whatever tickles your fancy, we're fully supportive of that.
It's interesting too, because Movember Foundation isn't just about testicular cancer or prostate cancer. It is certainly about suicide prevention. We actually talked to a mate of yours, Sammy, a couple of months ago when the Distinguished Gentleman's Ride came up. Tell us about the suicide prevention programs that Movember Foundation is involved with.
Yeah, so as you mentioned before, suicide's a leading cause of death for men aged 15 to 44 years, and we recognise that there's something specific about suicide amongst men, and you know we're trying to address this notion of guys not being able to talk about their issues or talk with their mates when they're struggling, and so we're really trying to change that, really trying to build awareness around that, and also just allowing a conversation amongst blokes. It can really change the experience that they're having, and it's all about guys stepping up for their mates and supporting their mates when they might be dealing with something really difficult. And so we, obviously, during the month of November, we're supporting conversations around that, and then the funds raised during the month go to innovative breakthrough programs that are really trying to address this issue of you know, high rates of suicide.
Which also includes programs with Beyond Blue. Six men each day die in Australia. They take their own lives. They would be the one in 20 people that attempt suicide. So only one attempt of suicide is successful. So that's about 120 guys each day considering taking their lives or perhaps attempting it as well. So the statistics are out there. Please support Movember. Get to the Movember website and certainly make a donation or grow a moustache.
Certainly. No, it's a great way to get involved during the month. And, yeah, we look forward to plenty of great moustaches out there.
Thanks for your help tonight, Rhett, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Wonderful. Take care, guys.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.